I'm going to be talking today about the sequestration, the fiscal cliff, and the various government shutdown. We have a triple threat facing federal workers and many people who are associated with the government, including contractors. We've managed to make it without going over the fiscal cliff. That was the first hurdle. Many people think the one coming up as early as mid-February could be even worse, and that's a possible shutdown. My guest today, my first guest, is Janet Copenhaver. She's been tracking the shutdown action, the fiscal cliff, and all that for federally employed women. Janet, you've been tracking the shutdown action and the potential for the public and the federal workforce itself for a couple of months now. Can you kind of take us through what a worst-case scenario of what would happen if we've made it past the fiscal cliff?
Correct.
Did not go over that. And a lot of people thought, that, I must say, many people thought that that was more of a kind of a kabuki dance than anything else, that it was sort of posturing and that kind of thing, but it wasn't going to happen. The same people are very concerned about the possibility of a shutdown, a government shutdown.
Right, and as you mentioned, we do have a triple threat coming, and it does relate to that fiscal cliff vote. I guess it was New Year's Day, where a lot of the diehard conservatives did not want to increase spending, but did support the fiscal cliff, and now they're digging in further. And that's why I think, as you mentioned, people are very concerned about this triple threat coming, first with the debt ceiling in mid-February, then with the sequestration cuts about March 1st, and then the expiration of the continuing resolution, which funds the government right now on March 27th, all going to have an impact on not only federal workers, but more importantly, what we keep stressing are the services that they provide to Americans each and every day that Americans really rely on.
Well, the president said, and I thought it was forthright of him, or some would say a scare tactic, but he said if there is a government shutdown, that things like Social Security will be affected. That the implication is that checks or those people who still get checks could be delayed.
Exactly. And he said even the pay for current federal workers could be delayed. Think about it. The government could shut down, and that means everything shuts down. That means delays at the airports. That means food safety, all kinds of safety, public safety, defense. It's just astronomical and will really have an impact economically as well on our nation overall. And this, you know, the political posturing has got to end, and we've got to do what's best for the American people.
Well, you know, I lived through the shutdown of 95-96. That was when then President Clinton squared off against then House Speaker Newt Gingrich. And the government actually shut down for two different periods over that winter, the winter of 95-96. A lot of people, including myself, said it wouldn't happen. And, of course, it turns out we were wrong. But I don't recall now things like air traffic being impacted in law enforcement. Is that am I forgetting?
Yeah, you know, you might be right in the sense that they will probably exempt a lot of they'll call them, what are they called, necessary or
emergency now. Yeah.
Right. So you're right, but you know, you'd have those people on the front lines, but then what about all the other people that support them, you know, who are not considered necessary or emergency personnel? So there will be the ripple down effect, and yes, you'll have people there at the front line, but I can't help but think that down the road, you know, you're going to have repercussions from everybody is going to have repercussions from these shutdown.
Well, in the past, you keep prefacing this by saying the past, when you had shutdowns and when you had furloughs, government workers were made whole eventually, in most cases within a couple of weeks. So nobody really lost any salary in the shutdown of 95-96.
Right.
It amounted to, had people known it, it was a paid midwinter vacation. But more recently, last year, the Federal Aviation Administration had to furlough some people. I think these were primarily people who were in the medical end of it, who they check out crews or maybe check out other FAA personnel. But they were furloughed during a fight over the transportation bill. And when they came back, Congress said, no, we're not going to pay them. And the Department of Transportation somehow found funds and paid them. So it made them whole. But I coming at it from a different angle this year, most of us in Washington, when you talk about a government shutdown, we tremble, we're in horror. We think Starbucks will be empty, the parking lots will be empty, nobody will be eating out, we will become a distressed city. But a lot of people beyond the Beltway think a government shutdown would be a good thing, and I suspect there are members of Congress, too, who say, let's shut it down and see how vital it, how necessary it really is.
Well, and that's one of the, I don't want to say misunderstandings, but the fact that we keep stressing is, you know, 85%, and Mike, you've said this before, 85% of the federal workforce is outside the Beltway. And few has done a lot of research. We're right now in the middle of doing our employment statistics where we break it down by district, congressional district, and every congressional district, every member of Congress has federal workers in their district. And if you're looking at some of these rural areas where a farm bureau or a health facility that's a government-run facility is shut down, it will devastate that small town. And that's what seems to be getting lost. Yeah, when we look at Washington, it's a very different scenario. But when you go out to some of these rural areas, the government is the employer, and they're going to have some serious economic fallout from a government shutdown.
Well, I would think places like federal prisons that are, you know, usually in some small towns, that is the employer. Either the federal prison or the VA hospital is the employer, and that could be a problem.
Exactly.
The other thing, and you have cities like Ogden, Utah, relatively small, Huntsville, Alabama, relatively small, but their percentage of government workers in their workforce is tremendous, humongous. And when you add on to that, in a place like Washington, where we have lots of feds, as many as most states, when you add on to that contractors. Now, the Brookings Institution some years back estimated that for every single government worker, there was six contractors, whether defense-related or not. And in some agencies like the Department of Energy, extremely high percentage. But even in places like the CIA, you have large numbers of contractors working in the building on Langley.
Exactly.
The contractors, is my understanding, if there is a shutdown and or a furlough, no work, no pay.
I would assume so. I mean, if you're a contractor and you're working on a government project, and that government project stops, then I can't imagine you'd be getting paid. Now, I don't know that for certain. I don't work for these contractors, but that would go without. I would think that would go hand in hand.
I've had emails from several of them who said that was the case. That it when the government agency shuts down for whatever reason, and it could be even a snow day, or if feds got inauguration day off as they normally do in the Washington area this year, it coincides with Dr. King's birthday. But if no work, no pay for these contractors, I think that's pretty much countrywide.
Well, you would know you're getting these emails. So that's, you know, another further ramification of a government shutdown. And I just want to go back to, you know, you were mentioning about federal workers are made whole. And I got to say that few, yes, I mean, we appreciate the benefits. But we really, from day one of this economic and financial argument, have been talking about the services that Americans depend on. My members are very proud of the work that they do to serve the American people. And we did this, we're doing this weekly sequestration scenario where we send it out to the media as well as every office on Capitol Hill. We started in September, right?
Jenna, excuse me, let me interrupt you.
Sure.
And we need to take a short break here, but when we come back, I'd like to ask you about that. If you could sort of run those things in sequence of what you've been doing,
sure.
Let us know what would happen. Be right back here on Federal News Radio.
From the tropical island of Maui to the top of Capitol Hill, Ardent MC, a hub zone contractor, solves difficult problems. Since 2003, Ardent MC has delivered the Department of Homeland Security's Common Operational Picture, which allows information to move throughout the agency when supporting state, local, and federal emergency response. Ardent MC utilizes its hub zone certification to promote technology and employment in underutilized areas, like their Maui Software Development Center. Ardent MC is known for taking the chaos out of complexity. Visit ardentmc.com to learn more.
Soon this little baby I'm singing to sleep will start to walk. Before I know it, I'll be dropping her off at school, beaming when she walks up to accept her diploma, or holding back tears as she takes those big steps down the aisle. But before she takes all those steps, she and thousands like her will need you to take yours. Join March for Babies to help make her steps possible.
March for Babies!
Start your team today at marchforbabies.org.
If you raise high the buff in blue, now's your chance to win prizes for showing your commitment to the Colonials. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now and start earning points for your likes, retweets, shares, check-ins, and more with GW Athletics content from GWSports.com and social media properties. Registration is free, and you can win special fan experiences, ticket upgrades, and buff in blue gear. Visit RaiseHighRewards.com now.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
Enjoy the comedy of Emmy Award-winning Dana Carvey and dance the night away to the sounds of Jim Belushi and the Sacred Hearts Band at the 26th Annual Leukemia Ball, presented by Bio in partnership with Genentech, Saturday, March 23rd at the Washington Convention Center. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser features a world-class silent auction with travel packages from American Airlines and a chance to win one of two Mercedes-Benz. D.C.'s largest non-political fundraiser, the Leukemia Ball, supports the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society's critical research and patient services programs. There are more than 19,000 people in the D.C. metro region living with leukemia, lymphoma, or myeloma. Someone is diagnosed with a blood cancer every 4 minutes. Help the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society cure blood cancer by attending this can't-miss event. To purchase a ticket, please call 703-399-2900. That's 703-399-2900. Or visit leukemiaball.org.
The men and women of our National Guard and Reserve Forces are working hard on the battlefield and here at home. Employer support of the Guard and Reserve is working just as hard for them. For over 36 years, ESGR has paved the way for greater understanding between our Guard and Reserve Forces and their civilian employers, promoting a culture where all American employers support and honor the military service of their employees. Together, we all serve. To learn more, visit www.esgr.mil.
The digital government strategy has seen significant growth in the past 6 months, but there's still progress to be made, including the expansion of data.gov and the Federal CIO's Council launch of a shared mobile app development program. Join FCA Bethesda on January 22nd at the Bethesda North Marriott as Dave McClure moderates a panel with members of the Digital Government Advisory Group to discuss accomplishments, forthcomings, and how industry can help agencies deliver on requirements. Register today at fcabethesda.org/janbrown. Breakfast.
Janet, the research you and few have done on this has been very interesting, and I know people I've used it and others in the media have used it. Tell us some of the rolling effects of a going over the fiscal cliff or the government shutdown or sequestration, and is there any difference in what would happen under each of these?
Well, I guess a government shutdown would be everything would shut down. Sequestration would be, you'd still be trying to do your job, but with
it's orderly, I guess.
It can be orderly, I guess. But it's looking more at like furloughing or getting rid of some of your workforce. But either one is going to be devastating to our nation and the services that are provided by the government. So, like I said, we started in September, right when school was starting. Talked about the number of teachers that would have to be laid off. Head Start, school children, 100,000 school children would lose places in Head Start. We moved on to September, the hurricane and tornado season. Talked about air travel, and that actually took up 3 weeks because there's so much. If you think about air travel, not only travelers who are going to be delayed at security lines, but as well as products coming in and out of our nation, plus the economic effect of just massive layoffs of our airline personnel, to basic, financial, to Social Security delays, to public safety. It just goes on and on and on. And the sad thing is we thought we were going to be done with this series December 31st, and unfortunately we've had to restart. And we won't have any problem coming up with a weekly one-pager from now for the next 2 months. And that's it's good in the sense that all these services are provided.
Good, but it's too bad.
Exactly, exactly. So, unfortunately, we have to continue on. And basically what we're saying is, you know, this is stupid, nonsensical, across-the-board cuts don't work. And how can you just do this and impact all these critical services that are provided every day to Americans?
Well, we got a taste of it. You guys were ahead of the curve on this when you came out with your hurricane and tornado season report. And then we had this freak superstorm Sandy that barely missed the Washington area, hit New Jersey and hit New York. And now, 60 days later, even with a fully functioning government, some would argue about that, with a fully functioning government and Congress, they still haven't provided relief. There are still people who are living in hotels and motels. Their businesses have been ruined. Their houses are gone. And the government still hasn't moved to help them.
Exactly. And that's not even under sequestration. So this one pager that you were talking about, what the ironic thing was, the sequestration would cut 10% from the National Weather Service, which issues the warnings to people. So that would be cut, so we wouldn't get the warnings, and then they would cut $580 million from the Federal Emergency Management Agency Disaster Relief Fund. So not only could you wouldn't have time to prepare, but then when you got hit, you would have no money to help rebuild your house. And it's really sad, and like you said, that it's 60 days later, and they just passed it last night. And that's actually a portion of it. It's not even the full funding yet. So, you know, it would even be worse under sequestration.
It's funny. There's a story in the Post today of President Obama saying that the House Republicans want this shutdown to make a point. And in the looking at page 12 of Politico today, and it says GOP lawmakers say default is an Obama scare tactic. So each side is saying the other one wants this.
As I mentioned before, we're doing these stats, and every congressional district has federal workers, and that means they're saying that their constituents deserve a furlough or deserve, not to be paid, and that's where we've got to get some federal workers to be really contacting Congress and telling them, hey, I'm a constituent of yours, and I perform this critical service, and by the way, you know, I can't go for 2 weeks without a paycheck. It's really going against their own constituents.
You know, I think most of us, unless we're actually involved in a profession or a trade or a craft, really don't understand what goes on in another line of work. All I know about the police work is what I see on cop shows on television. What I know about politics is that kind of thing. I suspect that the average American really doesn't have a clue as to what the federal government does, what it's into. The agriculture department, for example, you know, we think of it as taking care of farmers, but agriculture also is involved very heavily in food inspections and meat inspections, correct?
Exactly, and also the food aid, like they do the food programs in the schools. They don't call it food stamps anymore. I forget what they call it now, but so they're part of that, and like you said, the food inspections, which is so critical. I mean, look at how many scares we've had in the last couple of years, and again, if you're talking about cutting staff or furloughing staff, it's going to get even worse, and we just can't afford that right now.
Well, you have it's been headlines in the Washington papers, that coal mine, a horrible coal mine disaster in West Virginia a couple of years ago, and now it's coming out that people were being tipped off about surprise inspections from the Bureau of Mines, not being tipped off by them, but they're just things that people don't think about the government being involved in, from 60,000 feet for air traffic controllers to a mile underground for miners.
Exactly, and the whole ripple effect of how much we're impacted. We did a publication, I guess it was about 2 years ago, and we went through a 24-hour period, 30-minute increments, of just the vast array of services that are provided and things you don't even think of, like our clocks. You know, we've got the atomic clock that keeps us all going on track, on schedule, to schools, to food inspection, to Social Security, to clean air, to the environment, to air traffic control, air travel. It's just astronomical, and we don't even think about it anymore. Everything that we buy has been inspected, and it's just really critical, and that's what we've been working on for the last many years, actually, is to describe to Congress exactly what these services are and how much that Americans depend on them. And that's got to go outside the Beltway, too, because that's getting lost out there as well.
Janet, the traditional thing when you want to get something done or undone in Washington, you say, write your member of Congress, write your senator. But that's really not realistic in this day and age for a couple of reasons. One, since 9/11, those anthrax scares, you send a letter to Congress, it goes to, I think, Andrews Air Force Base or Bowling Air Force Base, and they check it out, and then it goes to the member of Congress. So it can, there can be a lag even in the normal snail mail. Is there anything realistically a citizen can do to make their views known on this, the fear of a shutdown or favoring it?
Right. Well, I would never say it's not worth contacting your member of Congress, because they do, especially in massive numbers, and that's why, you know, one or two letters, no. But if you're sending thousands of letters, and when I say letters, I don't mean the snail mail, because, like you said, they're irradiated. It takes 6 weeks to get there. But email is still a way to go. FEW has a great interactive website that we can send letters, or my members can send letters to their representatives on any subject they want. So email still works. We also stress when they have in-district or town hall meetings, it's a great way to get in there and get your views heard to your member of Congress in person. And then we also stress when they're in the districts, set up meetings and go in. It's less pressure. The time pressures aren't as extreme as when they're in Washington, D.C. You'll usually get in with a member of Congress, and you can raise your issues. And they do listen to a certain extent. You know, they'll look at sometimes just how many letters they get in on each side, yays and nays, and that goes into their consideration. If you're ever in Washington, stop by the office, talk to the staff person who's responsible for those issues. So it really, I would never say don't do it, because it does matter, and they need to hear from constituents, because constituents are who put them into office, and they can put them out of office.
Very good. Okay, thank you, Janet Copenhaver from Federally Employed Women. Thanks for that update on the dangers of the fiscal cliff, which we've passed, shutdown, which we're facing, and then sequestration, which could present other problems. Going to take a short break here and come back talking with Sean Riley from the Federal Times.
Thanks.
For P150, P150GA, P150OK, P150TN, C250E, C250Q.
Whoever came up with the saying, put your money where your mouth is, must have had some dental work done. Just a filling can cost over $100, and other procedures like crowns and root canals can cost you hundreds more. Without dental insurance, you could be putting a lot of money where your mouth is. But now you can get dental insurance for less than a dollar a day. This isn't a discount plan. This is real dental insurance for over 300 covered procedures. Everything from cleanings and fillings to crowns and dentures. For details, call Physicians Mutual Insurance Company, 1-800-200-0885. Your acceptance is guaranteed for one of these insurance policies. Even if you're retired, you can see any dentist you choose and never have to pay a deductible. Get the coverage you need for less than a dollar a day and put less money where your mouth is. For free information, call now, 1-800-200-0885. 1-800-200-0885.
For secure computing in the office or on the go, the TacLane Multibook from General Dynamics delivers defense-grade security integrated into a Dell laptop. For the first time, you can simultaneously connect to secure and unsecure networks, even Skype with your friends and family from anywhere, anytime. Ideal for today's government workforce, the NSA-certified TacLane Multibook Secure Laptop keeps you mobile, connected, and protected. To learn more, visit www.gdc4s.com/multibook.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series, Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Federal employees receive 15% off select Sprint monthly services, and for a limited time, may be eligible to receive a $50 service credit when they switch a line to Sprint. Visit a Sprint retail store in your area and mention where you work to find out if you are eligible, or visit Sprint.com/Fed. That's Sprint.com/FED.
Coverage not available everywhere ends 4/10/13, subject to 2-year agreement, activation and early termination fees and other restrictions. Service credit will be credited within 3 invoices. Restrictions apply.
There are those who dedicate themselves to a sense of honor, to a life of courage, and a commitment to something greater than themselves. They have always defended this nation and each other. They still do. The few, the proud, the Marines.
For over a century, Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington has served the youth in our nation's capital. The club's new STEAM initiative uses the arts to teach science, technology, engineering, and math. Today, more than ever, we need your support of STEAM. It will encourage our youth to think rather than memorize, create rather than copy, and to be resourceful rather than reserved. So visit boysandgirlsclubs.org. Send a dollar or more as an investment to help us help our kids pick up STEAM. Boys and Girls Clubs of Greater Washington, great futures start here.
This message is brought to you by GEICO and Federal News Radio.
If he could only have waited a few years, Redskins quarterback RG3's surgery on his ACL and LCL knee ligaments might have had better odds of success. Surgical reconstruction of the ACL uses donor soft tissue like tendons and attaches it to the leg bone. But the real ACL blends soft tissue into bone through cartilage. Helen Liu, a Columbia University bioengineer, is recreating that in the lab.
We think that it's better to pre-engineer the integration outside the body.
She's making artificial ACLs, and each end is cartilage because in the body, bones fuse with cartilage naturally. For the rest of the artificial ligament, engineers are crafting a perfect mix of calcium content.
We've already characterized all the mechanical properties, so we know what the design criteria are.
Liu says a structure that closely mimics the natural ACL will minimize joint stress. To find out more, please go to www.nae.edu/radio. With the National Academy of Engineering, Randy Atkins, Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome to Your Turn. This is Mike Causey, and I'm going to be talking with Sean Riley. He's a senior writer for the Federal Times and been a very busy guy this week, judging from the stories with his byline in the paper. Sean, are you with us?
I'm here. How are you, Mike?
Well, thanks for taking time out. I know you're jumping around. So much stuff going on. Obviously, we're going to talk about the possibility of the shutdown and the sequestration. I know you've been tracking that. But there's some other interesting things out there and a variety this week. One of them is this arbitrator-imposed contract between the U.S. Postal Service and the National Association of Letter Carriers. And my sense is that I knew a labor guy who turned arbitrator, and the idea is to be kind of like Solomon. You split the baby right down the middle, so both sides are relatively happy and relatively unhappy. It looks to me like in this case, the Postal Service may have come out with a little bit better deal.
I've actually asked the Postal Service about what impact this new contract, which was announced late last week, will have on its personnel costs for the employees represented by the National Association of Letter Carriers. Haven't gotten a response on that yet. It does seem like both sides got something of what they wanted, although I think the Postal Service perhaps might have wanted to get a little bit more. They put out a statement in response to media queries saying that they were disappointed that the new contract will continue limited no layoff protections and also will continue or impose, I'm not sure exactly which, restrictions on contracting out. The letter carriers who have basically been in a wage freeze since their previous contract formally expired back in November 2011, they will get a total of 3.5% across the board increases, I think, through 2015. But at the same time, their health and the share of what they pay in terms of their health insurance will go up. I think right now employees pay about 20% of the cost. That will go up to about 24%, which is still less than the average federal employee pays, which is around 28-30%.
Yeah, I thought that was interesting. And given the fact that health costs are rising and traditionally have risen much faster than the regular rate of inflation, this is one reason that people who want to cut costs argue for vouchers, is the fact that give somebody a fixed amount of money, let them buy the health insurance then, and they will sort of self-discipline themselves and shop for a lower-priced plan, a plan with fewer premiums, lower premiums. And in the case of this, if the Postal Service is progressively paying a smaller percentage of its employees' health care over time. That could be a significant saving. I think it would more than offset the pay raises.
It could well be. It's hard to, you know, it just depends, obviously, on what the total cost of the premium is over the life of the contract. And as we talked about on the program before, you know, the Postal Service wants to pull out of the Federal Employees Health Benefits Plan, create its own health insurance program. To use our favorite metaphor or simile, the two sides agreed to kick that can down the road a bit, and they're going to have, under the contract, they'll have a task force to look at that or at least examine health care issues. So there could be some further developments depending on what comes out of that.
You know, and talking to people about that, about the Postal Service going it alone, I can't find anybody in the who understands the program or health insurance that thinks it's a good idea, except for officials of the Postal Service.
That's right. They say that it would cost the money. They also say, although it's not quite clear how, that this would they could provide better coverage for employees. You know, so far, you know, it's an idea that's now been out there for well over a year. As far as I can tell, perhaps there's going on something going on behind the scenes. It has yet to gain any traction from either Congress or the executive branch, or, you know, the White House.
Yeah, that's that really is a puzzler. I wanted to talk about the combined federal campaign and the new the changes in the combined federal campaign.
Yeah, these are proposed changes that the Office of Personnel Management is pursuing. They come in response, and partly in response to a commission that OPM Director John Barry set up back in 2011, the CFC 50 Commission, which is intended to take a close look at the CFC's operations on its 50th anniversary. It was created back in the early 60s. And the commission came out with a number of recommendations last year, and what OPM has done is taken some of those, added a few of its own, as far as I can tell, and put them into a package of draft regulations that's now under review by the Office of Management and Budget. And OPM isn't commenting on them, saying they don't comment under on draft rules that are under review. But it looks like if they go forward, if they're implemented in their current form, it would mean a total restructuring of how the CFC operates. You know, they would get rid of the new regs would appear, for draft regulations would appear to get rid of the current kind of locally based structure of the CFC, where you have about 184 campaigns around the country. They're run by what are called local federal coordinating committees, and then who often contract with local United Ways to handle administration and fundraising. In their place, you would have a smaller number, and OPM's not saying how many, but regional committees that would be more closely controlled by OPM. And then those committees or OPM could contract for administrative, for essentially back office services. At the same time, charities, which currently don't pay anything to participate in the CFC, you know, essentially be designated as a potential beneficiary or recipient of federal employees' pledges, they would have to begin paying an application fee that would be non-refundable each year to participate in the CFC. It's not clear exactly how much they would have to pay, but when we asked about this is a recommendation that came out of the commission. When I checked around with some charities a few months ago about this, one or two were supportive. Others expressed concern about the potential amount of the fee, and others just wouldn't comment. So we'll see where that goes. But overall, I mean, these recommendations taken together would amount to a complete overhaul of the CFC. And it comes as, you know, the CFC is facing declining participation overall from federal employees. And the last 2 years, the 2010-2011 season, pledges were actually down a little bit. I think they could be down even more for the season that just concluded. So I think OPM has concluded that they really do need to do something.
And I don't ever recall that happening before. I mean, we haven't had pay freezes, and certainly not extended pay freezes. But I don't recall a year when the contributions, the amount of the contributions was down. The number of contributing might have dropped off, but the amount of the contributions has gone up every year. Is that your
pretty
understanding?
Much. I think there may have been a period, decades ago where you did see a decline in contribution, but certainly it hasn't happened lately. I don't think it happened at all through the last decade or so.
One of the problems with any of these things is the everybody wants in. Everybody wants a piece of this because they know that somebody will check the box and they'll get some money. But the problem is the administrative fees of these various charities. And I looked into that when I was with the Washington Post. And there was a major scandal some years back with the United Way here in the Washington area when they found out the the person that running it was making this humongous salary, and that their administrative fees were double digit, and they had gotten out of hand. And that may be what OPM is going after here, if they want to reduce the 184 locals to regional things and maybe reduce the overhead.
Well, I think that's part of it. Definitely, they say, you know, OPM says in this draft, this package of draft regulations, that essentially a more centralized operation would carry lower overhead costs. And, you know, in terms of charging the charities an application fee, you know, the idea is to change the current system where overhead for the campaign comes directly out of donor pledges. So you earmark $100, $50 every pay period to the Red Cross. Well, a certain percentage of that's going to be taken out of that. You know, some amount of money is going to be taken out of the pledge to cover CFC overhead costs, as I understand it. And so donors can't be entirely sure exactly how much their pledge is going to their designated charity. And certainly with some of the smaller CFCs over the years, you've seen very high overhead rates, I mean 50-60%. And OPM has been pushing individual CFCs to merge, you know, create larger CFCs, and so presumably become more efficient. But that is still an issue in some, you know, for some, particularly the smaller campaigns.
Okay. You had a piece this week, Sean, about where the OMB sent a letter to Capitol Hill, the budget chairman, Paul Ryan, and they said, sorry, but the budget request, which is normally or is due this year, February 4th, is going to be a little late. What does that mean?
Well, the practical impact probably isn't that great, and you know, it's not unusual. You know, the statutory deadline is supposed to be the first Monday in February, which this year is February 4th. And, you know, given how dysfunctional the congressional budget process has become, it doesn't have any, you know, direct practical implications right away. I mean, part of it will depend on how late it actually is. And in the letter, OMB said they would just, you know, they didn't give a projected new date. They just said they'd get it over as soon as possible. I've talked to a number of people who expect it to be as late as March, which would be, even by, you know, recent standards, would be pretty late. But, you know, as you know, once the budget request has gone to Congress in the last few years, I mean, essentially has been, you know, quote unquote, dead on arrival. And you've had Congress having difficulty even to come up with its own budget resolution. So again, the immediate practical effect won't be too significant, I think. But, you know, I was talking to one consultant, a former federal budget officer, who was pointing out that very often, even when Congress does get around to approving agency spending levels, they're very often in, you know, range about 5% of what the administration proposed. So this does have some practical impact down the road. I mean, it's not completely a dead letter. But in regard to the direct effect, it's more symbolic, I think, of how broken the budget process is in terms of how it works in practice versus how it's supposed to work in theory.
I had a thought on that, but we need to take a short break here on Federal News Radio. We'll be right back talking with Sean Riley from the Federal Times.
Technology? The new career site PowerJobs.com is currently featuring senior-level technology positions from top companies like Accenture and Pioneering Evolution. Powered by Federal News Radio, Politico, and ABC7. PowerJobs.com is designed to connect Washington's top talent to top jobs in the region's influential industries. Visit PowerJobs.com today to start your job search. PowerJobs.com. Finally, a career site made for you.
Welcome to today's lottery drawing. And today's winning numbers are not yours, not yours, and another number that's not yours. And the final number is not yours.
When it comes to having money, don't rely on luck. Brew your own coffee at home instead of buying that latte. Brown bag it to work instead of ordering it. Go to feedthepig.org for more free ideas on how to save.
Feedthepig.org.
This message brought to you by the American Institute of Certified Public Accountants and the Ad Council.
BYOD. The employee owns the devices, they bring them into work, and then they hook up to the local network. And so this whole movement toward portable devices is actually transforming all of IT. And there are a lot of opportunities there. All the security related to BYOD, bring your own device, a lot of security issues, security policy relating there. Application development for all of these items, it's a very, very big area.
Stratford University's Tech Talk Radio, Saturday mornings from 9 to 10 on 1500 AM.
Take your big ideas off the back burner. With HP Converged Infrastructure Solutions, you can spend most of your time and IT budget on your mission instead of IT operations. Servers, storage, networking, security, and management software work together to accelerate IT, greatly reduce application provisioning time, and get you ready for the cloud. Plan your strategy with HP Consulting for faster implementation and execution. The power of HP Converged Infrastructure is here. Learn more at hp.com/go/federal.
Today's inauguration news is brought to you by Deloitte.
The General Services Administration provides support to all agencies during the inauguration by supplying everything from office space, furniture and equipment, to services like payroll, IT, and mail management. Both the Presidential Inaugural and the Armed Forces Inaugural Committees are supported by GSA as they plan and execute all the activities for the inauguration, including the ceremony, parade, and security details. Together with the Office of Personnel Management, GSA provides guidance material for any new appointees.
Every 4 years, Washington gets a chance to redefine its vision of how to make America stronger. How will you help shape our future? Turn to Deloitte. With our private sector insight and public sector experience, we'll help you rethink, reduce, or restructure, or even change the game so that the new normal has better odds of becoming the next prosperity. See how at Deloitte.com/federal. Wherever you need to go, Deloitte sees you there.
Whether you're at work all day, running errands, or on vacation, why worry about the safety of your home and family? Trust Ackerman Security Systems. Why Ackerman? Because security is what they do, and they do it better than anyone else with an award-winning monitoring center. You can also trust Ackerman to save you money. It's just $18.95 a month with no cost to switch. Call today and get up to 3 months free of Ackerman's basic monitoring. 888-999-1070. AckermanSecurity.com.
WTOP and the Washington Wizards are looking for the best junior broadcaster in D.C. Your child can join me, Dave Johnson, along with Glenn Consor, as we call the Wizards-Houston Rockets game Saturday, February 23rd at Verizon Center. Plus, you'll get 4 tickets to the game and dinner in the press room. To enter, kids between the ages of 8 and 14 can submit an essay telling us why they should become our Wizards junior broadcaster. We're taking entries through January 18th. For all the rules, details, and to enter, visit WTOP.com, search Junior Broadcaster. Good luck.
I love my husband, but I didn't realize our difficulties had to do with his drinking. Our pastor suggested I go to Al-Anon family groups. I didn't think I would be comfortable, but I decided to try a meeting. The Al-Anon meeting really opened my eyes. Are you troubled by someone's drinking? You might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon family group meeting from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-Al-Anon.
GovEvents.com is your one-stop shop for government and military events worldwide. With hundreds of event organizers posting their government and military-related conferences, trade shows, expos, webcasts, and more, you'll save time and energy using GovEvents to find events to attend, exhibit, or sponsor. Search for government and military events by date, location, keyword, organizer, or focus. It's free, so join today. GovEvents.com. That's GovEvents.com.
Welcome back to Your Turn. Mike Causey. I'm talking with Sean Riley from the Federal Times, and we were discussing the fact that the administration has said it's going to be a little late this year in sending its budget to Capitol Hill. Normally it goes up the first Monday in February, but the director of OMB says it's going to be a little bit late. And I find it so interesting that everything is so political in this town at this level that Paul Ryan, the chairman of the House Budget Committee, posted a Twitter, as you reported in your story, Sean, and he says it would be a small step toward fiscal sanity if they would propose a budget on time. I can't remember the last time that Congress, under Republicans or Democrats, has approved budgets on time. Can you?
Well, it's funny you should mention that, Mike. I was just talking to the CFO of a major agency last week who was saying the last time his agency got a full-year appropriation on time was 1998. So we're back in the second term of the Clinton administration. So clearly, Congress has not come through very often.
Yeah, it's become the norm. I mean, little children in Washington now know what CR, for continuing resolution, stands for.
That's absolutely right, but only in Washington.
Yeah, only in Washington. Thank heaven. Thank heaven for that. Hey, we spoke earlier, I don't know if you heard, with Janet Copenhaver from Federally Employed Women, and they have their take on what could happen if there is a government shutdown or if there is sequestration. And you have a good story this week about the OMB putting out its guidance to agencies on Monday, and among other things,
yeah.
Talking about furloughs, hiring freezes, buyouts, early retirements, and cutting contract employees. I mean, that's heavy-duty stuff.
It is, and this is really, it's interesting it should come out now. This is really the first formal, at least public acknowledgement by OMB, telling agencies that they better start planning for, potentially very significant budget uncertainties, no surprise to agencies. But, in the memo, the acting director of OMB said that, if sequestration does occur, now it's been due date or which, the sequestration cuts would begin March 1st, that, likely there will be hundreds of thousands of federal employee furloughs. There would be cuts in services for, like, food inspection, air traffic safety, border patrol, prison security, all that. And essentially just telling agencies to start looking at what they can do to reduce personnel costs. Mr. Zients was careful to say that agencies generally shouldn't act on these, go ahead and start doing any of the things right now, or if they do, they should consult with OMB first. But it did tell agencies to begin planning for this. And this comes, just a couple of days after the Deputy Secretary of Defense, Ash Carter, issued similar guidance essentially to DOD components, telling them to come up with draft implementation plans by February 1st on how they would reduce workforce costs. And interestingly, going back to the CR, the current six-month continuing resolution expires at the end of March. In his memo, Mr. Carter said that just under the CR, and this apparently would not include the possibility of sequestration, even under the CR, current rates of expenditure would mean if it continues through the rest of the fiscal year, DOD would run short of money. So it sounds like something could be coming one way or the other.
Yeah.
What happens with sequestration.
Right, and furloughs, not to make too fine a point, but a situation where you have sequestration, which is a rather, at least an orderly process, you have certain numbers and dates and goals, as opposed to a shutdown where everything just stops.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. There are two other. You've got the possibility, if Congress doesn't do anything once the current CR expires, you would have a partial government shutdown. I think the betting is they will either extend the CR or come up with some sort of solution. But to add one more element into the mix, you've also got the fact that the government is now running up against its debt ceiling, and so some action will have to be taken that within probably by the end of next month. Coincidentally, I think the Treasury Department just announced yesterday that it again is resorting to the G Fund, machinations with the G Fund and the Thrift Savings Plan to help buy a little more time. What happens with G Fund investments is their continually reinvested in short-term bonds. Those bonds count against the debt ceiling, and what the Treasury Department is doing, again, they've done this in the past, is they're suspending those reinvestments essentially to give themselves what they call headroom in terms of the debt ceiling. So essentially it gives them a few more weeks before they really completely run out of authority.
That always makes federal investors in the Thrift Savings Plan nervous, because the most cautious people and many of the older people in the program are in the G Fund because it's safe, and then they read on the internet or see a newspaper or a news story that says they're not going to be making any money in that, and they tend to panic each and every time. Although Greg Long, the executive director of the board, says that there is a make-whole provision in the law so that anything that is, quote, lost during this period will be made up.
That's right. And, this is legally, they have to make it up. And I certainly understand, I've heard from some of these folks who have money in the G Fund and certainly understand their concerns. And this happened, 2 years ago during the last debt ceiling crisis. And the Government Accountability Office put out a report last year, essentially kind of an after-action report on the measures taken what happened after that. And the G Fund during 2011 lost about $378 million in interest income that it would have otherwise received if Treasury had continued investing G Fund money in those short-term bonds. But the Treasury Department had, the government did make up that amount, and the fund, according to GAO, was fully restored, was made whole.
Yeah, it is.
So hopefully, I mean, I don't think investors have anything to worry about.
Yeah, sort of irony is that some of the most conservative investors, and again, some of the older people who were close to tapping their money when the recession hit 2007, 2008, 2009, when it bottomed out in March of 2009, they pulled their money out of the stock funds, so they were, in effect, selling low. And they put it into the G fund for safety. And now with the debt ceiling issue and this annual thing or biannual thing with the debt ceiling, some of these very conservative, cautious people are again seeing a threat to their funds, this time in the safest fund of all.
Sure, it's ironic, isn't it? And, you know, given the sort of, you know, crisis to crisis management attitude under which, you know, Washington seems to be operating nowadays, you can understand their concern. But, you know, once again, I think, as Mr. Long noted, the fund legally has to be made whole at the end of the day.
Yeah, it's intriguing. I guess it shouldn't be surprising, but the level of the partisanship in Washington really seems to get worse every year. But it is intriguing to see how both sides, liberals, conservatives, Democrats, Republicans, whatever their bent, how they have played this fiscal cliff and then now the shutdown and the threat of sequestration. And before the election, the administration went out of its way to say, no problem here. And the Labor Department, you recall, put out that memo to a company saying they did not have to send out warning letters to contract employees that they might be laid off. They said, you don't have to do it. And if there's any fines or penalties because of you not doing it, we'll pay for it.
Mm-hmm.
And that
right.
was before the election. Now, after the election, the votes are in. We know who won. The OMB and the others are pushing these panic buttons.
Yeah, and I mean, also, we're that much further into the fiscal year. You know, sequestration under the original 2011 law that, set this whole process in motion was supposed to begin January 2nd, but under the deal that was reached basically January 1st, it was all postponed 2 months, although the amounts that would be sequestered or would be cut are reduced from about a total of $109 billion for the government as a whole to $85 billion, essentially sort of proportionally in terms of on a month-to-month basis. But, you know, we'll be down. But now if sequestration does happen at the end of March, it'll be that much, you know, we'll be 5 months into the fiscal year instead of three. And you've still got the added uncertainty of the CR, and you've got the possibility of if there is no agreement on how to extend the debt, increase the debt ceiling, you've got the possibility that the government, and this would be, by everything I've read and heard, completely chaotic, the government have to be making some very tough decisions about what bills to pay because it wouldn't have money to cover everything.
Well, the fix is clearly in. The problem is we don't know what that fix is, who's doing what. But thank you, Sean Riley, for being with us this week. Very interesting. And remember, our shows are archived on our homepage. You can listen to them anytime. Tell a friend, and we'll see you next Wednesday at 10 a.m.
Thanks, Mike.